Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, howdy y'all. All right, you can set that off now. Come on, boom. All right, a lot of stuff to get to today. Donald Trump, obviously, nonstop Donald Trump. You just tuned into the Donald Trump show. I'm not happy about that, but that's the way it's got to be. I also have some sad numbers on the Democratic Party. I have later on in the show today, wait until you hear the story about, I mean, if you weren't mad about Donald Trump, you're going to get mad at the fact that apparently Japan knows how to do shit that it would take us 33 years to do. They had a sinkhole that opened up in the middle of a city. And wait until you hear how quickly they fixed it, and it looks brand spanking new. It's unbelievable. It shows you that a lot of our falling behind on infrastructure is just a lack of will to fix it among people in the government. And I went after Trump there, took a pot shot at Trump for no reason. I mean, Trump says he's going to, you know, do infrastructure spending. We'll see. We'll see. And also, don't ask me how, but Canadian anal sex made it into the show today. Canadian anal sex. I guess it's its own category of anal sex. So there's that, and that's always nice. Anyway, let's get started here, and you know what? Let's go ahead and do a little fun segment before we do anything else. So yesterday on the show, in the midst of a segment about Sean Hannity, I got something in my throat, and I started coughing, and this happened.
Accomplished flag. Shit, I think blew out my voice. It sounded dirty, blow out your voice. Hold. Okay, much better. No, this isn't an advertisement for vintage seltzer. Get it at a store near you. But it isn't bad, so maybe it is a little bit of an ad. But I didn't get paid for it, so vintage. I'll let you boys send me a check. Anyway.
So a listener to Secular Talk sent that to Vintage Seltzer on Twitter and told them, hey, listen, you know, start watching this clip from this timestamp. And they did. And they saw my non-ad ad. And then they tweeted me. And they were like, yeah, no, we'd love to send him something. I was like, that's the most awesome thing that's ever happened in my life. So I followed them, and they reached out to me. And now Secular Talk has officially sold out to Vintage Seltzer. Sorry, guys. I'm out here every day being all principled and whatnot. And then the second fucking big seltzer makes a move on me, I crumble like a little bitch. That's what happened. I sold out to Big Seltzer, and now they're sending me a package. Oh, are you kidding me? See, now, like we always talk about, the downside of, you know, something like this is Now you know Secular Talk is massively biased in favor of Vintage Seltzer. And so that makes it so that I would never in a million years do an advertisement for another seltzer company because I just sold out to Vintage Seltzer. They're going to send me a package. Now I'm biased in favor of them. And that's not the way it's supposed to go, man. I mean, now you know I have an unfair bias for the people in Vintage Seltzer. And you can't trust my opinion on seltzer anymore. I mean, it's very simple. So, you know, I'm not trying to drop any hints here, but if there are any other seltzer companies on Twitter, want to holler at your boy, just holler at your boy. You know what I mean? All right, for everybody who is listening and don't know what's going on, I'm literally sipping from a polar seltzer bottle as I'm making this mock segment here about selling out to Vintage Seltzer. I'm now sipping from Polar Seltzer. So, Polar, now you can get at me and send me some free seltzer. Huh? Huh? Secular Talk has sold out, man. Big Seltzer got me. It happened. They got me. Now if they start putting arsenic in their seltzer, you know you're not going to get the news from me. I'll cover it up now. At this point, if there is, hey, there's a fucking salmonella outbreak in this seltzer company or a plant or something. They randomly started putting arsenic cyanide in their seltzer. I'll be out here like, what are you? No, they didn't. I don't know what you guys are talking about. They're a great company. They're the best company ever. They're tremendous. Believe me. Okay. A little fun here for you at the beginning. All right. Now let's get into some sad stuff. Neoliberalism. Yes, it's happening. It's happening. I have a hilariously sad chart here to show you about what's happened to the Democrats recently. So this is data from House.gov, and specifically it's from Dr. Carl Klarner from Ballotpedia. And what this shows here is, as you can see, the number of Democrats in office since 2008 has sharply dropped. I mean, it's just been on the decline. I mean, I guess there was a little rebound there in 2012 when Obama got reelected. But obviously in the 2010 midterms, they got fucking wiped out. And the Democrats got really wiped out this time around in the Trump election. So Ben Norton said on Twitter, this is your party on neoliberalism. This is what happens. Now, understand, I want to be clear about this. I don't want to do a full false equivalence. So, in other words, I don't want anybody to get the misimpression that my argument is Barack Obama is equal to Ted Cruz. That's not true, and that's honestly stupid if you think that's the case. So are there good things that Obama's done? Of course. Are there good things that the Democrats have done? Of course. You know, my standard go-to answer for Obama and the good stuff he's done, as everybody knows, the Iran deal, I thought that was great. I thought it was done near perfectly, to be honest with you. The Cuba deal, the immigration executive order, I thought was fantastic. He's been slowly but surely releasing nonviolent drug offenders. So he's done many good things. Overtime rules, he changed the overtime rules so that more people get overtime pay. So the Democrats are more on your side than the Republicans are. However, this is the problem with neoliberalism, is that while all that's going on, what else is happening? President Obama is out there pushing for the TPP. You know, and people know, they look at NAFTA, they look at CAFTA, they look at permanent normal trade relations with China, they look at the WTO, and they might not be able to tell you all the details and all the nuances of it, but here's what they do know. My town, which had a fucking plant where everybody worked, now the jobs got shipped to Mexico or Bangladesh, and everybody here is poor and everybody here is struggling. And then Obama comes along and says, well, look, we're going to do a better trade deal this time. It's always a better trade deal. They never come out and say up front, yeah, you're going to lose a lot of jobs and the jobs are going to be shipped overseas and it's going to be a race to the bottom. And maybe you get goods that are 3 cents cheaper in Walmart, but there are no other upsides outside of that. So it's good for the business owners. It's not good for the people. It's not good for the middle class. And people know it. They sense it. So not only that, but Obamacare. Obamacare, I think, is better than if they had left the system as it was. But let's be clear, that's a right-wing reform. I mean, that's a reform similar to what Nixon wanted, and Bob Dole, and Newt Gingrich, and Chuck Grassley, and the Heritage Foundation wrote policy papers on the individual mandate system, which is what Obamacare is. So, and that's why you see with that, for example, you still left the private health insurance companies in control, and now they're price gouging everybody and saying, you know what, we're just going to hold the people ransom. So that's why prices are skyrocketing. So people look at neoliberalism and they go, yeah, not enough. And then all you needed was a hint of populism, somebody to come along and say, I'm on your side. Whether or not it's true, Trump says, look, no, I'm on your side. I'm going to fight for you. The forgotten man. And they say, okay, let's do this. And, of course, since it wasn't the left-wing populist movement that got over the top with Bernie Sanders, now you have this right-wing populist movement, which is probably a wolf in sheep's clothing, because at the end of the day, he's probably going to do all these horrific right-wing policies that are not good for the middle class. But then there's also just the heaping dose of bigotry and xenophobia and racism and sexism. And in Trump's case, guys, it just that's true. So a lot of people don't like it when you bring up those terms to describe somebody. I'm saying it, and there's a whole, you know, train of data backing up that point. So when it comes to bigotry, I mean, for Christ's sake, this is a guy who said, let's deport all undocumented immigrants. And we both know he's not talking about people named Hans and Sven. So ban 1.6 billion Muslims from coming into the country. That's not something you flippantly say. I mean, that's almost the definition of bigotry. 1.6 billion people because ISIS exists. So what, they're all guilty enough because they're Muslim. What are you going to do? I mean, what would the reaction be if he said, let's ban all Jews from coming into the country? You know, we have some Jews here who do this terrible tradition where they cut off the tip of a baby dick in a circumcision ritual, and then they suck the tip off of it. I'm not kidding. This is real. This is what, you know, the ultra-Orthodox fundamentalist Jews do. Yeah, circumcise and then suck off the tip of the baby dick. But if Trump came out and said, we got to ban all Jews, because look at what they're doing. This is horrible. Would people go, that makes sense. So they go, oh my God, what do you say is the most anti-Semitic thing I've ever heard? So why is it not anti-Muslim bigotry to say, yeah, you know, ISIS exists, so I don't know, keep out all Muslims. Ahmadiyya Muslims, moderate Sunni Muslims, Shia Muslims, you know, you name it, Sufi Muslims. So the guy is bigoted. Now, what does the Democratic Party need to do in order to regain momentum and to regain control? Very simple. You got to abandon all of the downsides of what you're currently doing. And the downsides are all neoliberal. So you're too hawkish on foreign policy. President Obama is 7 different interventions. You know, this is a president who came in promising, I'm going to get us out of these wars, and now we're involved in more conflicts. Now he sugarcoats it and says, well, you know, when I came in, there were over 100,000 troops in Iraq, and now there's only like 15,000. As if we're supposed to be like, oh, pat on the back, oh, you cut the number, while also expanding the number in Syria and doing more drone strikes in Pakistan and Yemen and yada yada. So cut off all the bad things you're doing. But see, that's the thing, is it's hard for them because they also are bought by Wall Street. The Republicans, we've known for the longest time, have been bought by Wall Street and bought by special interests. The Democrats, less so. But now it's like they've embraced that, you know, wholeheartedly. They've moved further in the direction. With Hillary Clinton as the nominee, their argument was, hey, I'm continuity. I'm the insider. I will, not change shit. America's already great. So I'm team establishment. Well, if you double down on the establishment strategy, of course you're going to get your ass handed to you. I said it a bunch of times during the general election. This is the first time in my lifetime you had the Democratic candidate who was arguing, no, yes, I'm more of an insider. My entire life has always been the Democrat saying, oh, no, I'm the outsider. You know, the Republican's the insider. I'm here for change. But Hillary flipped that narrative, and it wasn't a good narrative. So, but this is what happens when your party is neoliberal. Now, again, Obama largely weathered the storm because he did enough good things in his second term, and the economy is doing much better than it was under George W. Bush, so he still has a super high approval rating, 55%. But he's the anomaly among the new Democrats, among the centrist Democrats, the neoliberals. You know, all the other neoliberals, forget it. Evan Bayh got his clock cleaned in a recent election because he was the most corrupt of all the Democrats. Hillary Clinton obviously lost. Very corrupt herself, big-time neoliberal. You know, Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer is now pretending to be more progressive because his ass depends on it. You know, him maintaining power, it depends on that. If he doesn't do that, then there's going to be a progressive revolution against him, and they're going to say, step aside, Chuck, step aside. This is your party on neoliberalism. I mean, that's the answer, and Ben Norton is 100% right for saying that. And if you had an actual progressive Democratic Party, a less corporatist Democratic Party, a less centrist Democratic Party, a less hawkish Democratic Party, not only would they be hanging on and would they have the majority in the House and the Senate and would they hold the presidency, I think we can landslide these Republicans. It shouldn't be that hard to beat these monsters. I mean, these religious lunatics and total and utter sellouts who believe in, you know, voodoo economics, as George H.W. Bush said, the idea you cut taxes for the rich and deregulate and that solves everything. They have an ideology that's not backed by most Americans. So since that's the case, it should be easy to beat them, but you're struggling. And you're struggling because you're neoliberal. Time to drop that and dominate again. Okay. Next. Trump launched his transition website, and there's an alarming backpedal on one of his core promises during the campaign. On the issue of entitlements, his website now says this, quote, "Modernize Medicare so that it will be ready for the challenges with the coming retirement of the baby boom generation and beyond. Maximize flexibility for states in administering Medicaid to enable states to experiment with innovative methods to deliver health care to our low-income citizens." Oh, boy. So for those of you who don't speak politician, let me break that down for you. Yes, cutting these programs and privatizing these programs, or semi-privatizing these programs, that's all on the table. Now, Trump campaigned on the opposite. You know, famously, during the primaries, he was arguing with Ted Cruz and Jeb Bush and everybody on stage, saying, "No, I'm not going to cut Medicare. I'm not going to cut it. You paid into it, you're going to get it back. I'm not going to cut it. I'm not going to cut it." And he'd make the argument, this part was a little silly, but he'd say, "It's going to be so much growth, it's going to be so tremendous that we're not going to need to cut it. It's going to be taken care of." I mean, this is what all the goofy Republicans say with their, you know, Reaganomics idea. If you cut taxes for the rich and deregulate, the economy takes off and you don't need to change anything. You don't need to change it. Those programs will stay. It'll be tremendous. But look, the bottom line is, on that program, on those programs, you don't need major changes. It's the same bullshit they try to pull with Social Security. Another thing he's backpedaling on, he said he's not going to cut that, but the people he appointed to be on his transition team for the Social Security Administration, a Bush advisor and a Reagan advisor, in favor of privatizing Social Security. Oh, no. But they try the same thing, like, oh, no, see, it's going to go bankrupt. That's it, bankrupt, 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 bankrupt. That's nonsense. If you look at the numbers, I believe with Social Security, it's until 2037, it's fully solvent, fully solvent. And then after that, it pays out about 75% of its benefits. On what planet is that bankrupt? And all you have to do to fix it, as far as the eye can see, is remove the cap on the Social Security tax. So in other words, I think the number's at about $120,000. So if you, let's say you are a physical therapist for a living, and you make $120,000, you pay the same amount of money in Social Security tax as a CEO on Wall Street who raked in $13 million this year. The same amount of money, not just, hey, the same percentage, the same amount of money you pay in Social Security tax. Because there's a cap. You don't get taxed for Social Security on anything over about $120,000. You remove that cap and just make them pay the same percentage as the person making $120,000 or as the person making $60,000, and that's it. The program's fixed. So that's the answer. That's what Bernie Sanders was calling for. But, of course, you know, Trump's, oh, I'm going to protect it. I'm going to protect it. Anyway, now let me appoint people who want to cut it. Now it's the same thing. I'm telling you, this is the birth child of Paul Ryan. This is what's been, you know, going on in his mind and what he's been trying to do for years now. Is birth child a weird way to phrase it? Oh, brainchild? Birth child? Birth child is... Anyway, I think you understand what I'm saying. Modernize Medicare. Whenever you hear modernize, reform, update, all these terms used for Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security, immediately replace it with cut and privatize, because that's what it is. Those flowery words, that rhetoric, that's what they're saying. And believe me, they're going to pitch you on it. They're going to sell you on it as if it's the greatest thing ever. No, what we did is we saved the program. That's what they're going to say. They'll say, we're saving Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. We're saving these entitlement programs. We're doing this for you. We're doing it to keep it viable in the future. And the reality is that's not the case. Inevitably, they will be either cutting your payments or privatizing it, and henceforth cutting your payments and adding more risk to the situation so everything can go bust if you blink. And think about it. Bush tried to privatize Social Security in 2004. If he did that, what would have happened? In 2008, everybody would have went broke because the market crashed. He wanted to privatize it and hand it over to Wall Street. That would have been the worst thing ever. Now, again, the counterargument people would make is, okay, they would have temporarily crashed, but it would have bounced back, Kyle, because right now the market's doing well, right? But again, the counter to that is, hey, dipshit, you don't think we're in another bubble? You don't think it's going to pop again? It is going to pop again. Do you know nothing about economics? So the bubble's going to pop again, and all those people with their retirement savings in Wall Street and no more Social Security, now it's just privatized, well, again, gone. It just would have poof, went away. And we can't afford for these, like, five-year spans where people have their retirement funds disappear. That's crazy. But that's what Bush wanted. That's what the Republicans have wanted. That's what Paul Ryan has had a boner for since he was a child, to cut these programs or privatize these programs. And now, even though Trump campaigned against it, oh, he is ever malleable. So if Paul Ryan sits him down and gives him a good pitch, look, here's why we're doing it, Don. We're not doing it because we're bad guys. We're doing it because we want to save the program. We want to reform the program. We want to make it viable for the long run. He's going to fall for it hook, line, and sinker. Paul Ryan said we had to do this, so we have to do this. He's a numbers man. Tremendous. That's what he is. He's a numbers man. And we're not cutting the program. We're saving the program for the future. No, you would literally be cutting the program. But they'll spin it. They'll spin it. They'll spin it. And the saddest thing is the bitch-ass Democrats might go along with it. They might. They might, because they were dying to make a deal under Obama. Obama proposed a grand bargain to cut all these entitlement programs. And he was doing it under the guise of, we got to save it. We got to save it for the long run. But thankfully, you know who saved the day here? Tea Party Republicans. You want to know why? Because they're crazy and they wanted even more cuts. Like, that's, now you didn't cut enough, so we're going to block it. Okay, thanks. If you were a progressive, you were holding onto your seat like, oh, okay, this worked out somehow. We don't know how, but it did. Okay. Well, now they're looking, you know, now you're going to have perhaps the Republican Party line up behind Trump for this, behind Paul Ryan for this, and then the Democrats might be like, hey, what? Let's do that grand bargain that we wanted to do. So, oh, boy, this can get bad, but Trump appears to be backpedaling off of some core promises. I'm not going to cut Medicare. I'm not going to cut Medicaid. I'm not going to cut Social Security or privatize them or semi-privatize them. This language is exactly that. Modernize Medicare, red flag, modernize, and maximize flexibility for states in administering Medicaid. Hand it over more to the states and experiment with, quote, innovative methods to deliver health care to our low-income citizens. Innovative. In other words, the program's not good as it is. We got to be innovative. And what does innovation always lead to? Because what are they saying? Privatize it. That's always better, because the politicians got to sell out to their overlords, their corporate overlords, and this is just another example right here. Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump talked tough on trade and China. But now the Chinese government is striking back, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we also have an unholy alliance from the pits of hell to report to you today. Trump and Ted Cruz, are you fucking kidding me? How these guys went at it? I mean, these guys went at it in like a legendary way. And now all of a sudden they're giving each other smooth hand jobs behind the dumpster. Wait, man, wait until you hear it. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
black balloon makes them fly. Almost fell into that hole in your life. And you're not thinking about tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. Mm-hmm. That's right. We're here. The demons themselves. They're talking to each other. We have an unholy alliance straight from the pits of hell to report to you today. The Hill explains, President-elect Donald Trump's transition team is considering making Senator Ted Cruz the next attorney general, according to a new report. Cruz discussed a possible role in Trump's upcoming administration at a meeting in Trump Tower in New York City Tuesday, a person familiar with the matter told Bloomberg Politics. I'm at a loss for words. I really am. That's unbelievable. Do you guys remember the primary? Donald Trump accused Ted Cruz's dad of killing JFK. That sounds like a joke. No, but I'm serious. That's what happened. He did that. He tweeted an image of Ted Cruz's wife, and it said it was, or I should say he retweeted it, and it said something about nobody would spill the beans on her or something. An obvious pun, or the intended point being like, you know, she ain't, a picture's worth a thousand words. She's not as hot as your wife is, Don. I think it was a comparison of Melania versus Ted Cruz's wife. Like, this guy was the quintessential high school bully slapping around Ted Cruz. Now, I admit, the wife, you know, jab aside, because that was fucked up. There's no reason to swipe at his wife. But I enjoyed watching Trump manhandle Cruz during the primary, because Cruz is the most smarmy dickhead on the planet, and I actually think he's more dangerous than Donald Trump. I do. But now Cruz is genuflecting at the altar of power. Oh, you won. Oh, dear leader Donald Trump, you won. Now I will be your loyal servant, as long as I get a nice sweet gig in the administration. Attorney General? I'll take Attorney General. I'm be good, you know what I'm saying? So they despised each other. They yelled at each other. I think Cruz said he'd never support him, called him a con man. And then, of course, eventually he flipped. Now, why did he flip? People didn't talk about this that much. But he flipped because his donors fucking made him flip. We covered this story. People who gave Ted Cruz a shitload of money were like, here's what's going to happen, buddy. You're going to fall in line, or your chances in 2020 or 2024, they just don't exist. We're not going to fund you. So he's like, oh, shit, now my political career's on the line. Oh, I love Donald Trump. Did I say I didn't like him? Me. I'm Ted Cruz. Me. What a loser he is. So now, again, on Donald Trump's part, not that you couldn't piece it together beforehand, but now you really, 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 really know. I mean, this is piece of evidence number 9,712, that the guy, it's somehow he manages to fake authenticity in a way that's convincing to many people. Because understand something, if I'm going after a guy that hard in a primary on the Democratic side, like let's say I'm running against Evan Bayh being a massive corporatist sellout Democrat who's a lobbyist and he's the worst of the worst. I don't even know why he bothers to call himself a Democrat anymore. If I'm going after that guy and I'm saying you're a puppet, you're corrupt, you're stupid, you're this, you're that, is there any chance that when I get elected that afterwards I'd be like, okay, somebody call Evan Bayh. He needs a position in my administration. It's literally a 0% chance. I just wouldn't do it. Why? Because I have principles and because I've already established and I've already explained I'm not with that guy. I think that guy is fucking crazy and I think he's a sellout and I think he has bad character and the list goes on and on. Donald Trump pretended like that was the case. Lion Ted. He called him fucking Lion Ted. And now he's like, can you please come live for my administration? I'd really appreciate that. Lion Ted. All right, let's get Lion Ted in here because now Lion Ted, Ted is honest Ted because now I want him on my team. Why would you do that? If he's a liar, you're saying he's a liar. He's a bad person. I don't agree with him. He fucking makes shit up. Now you just flip on that because it's politics and you're a standard politician. Donald Trump managed to pull off an amazing con. He really did. This idea to people that like, no, I'm the billionaire for the people. Alleged billionaire. For the people. And I'm honest. I'm not like these other politicians. You know, I'm out here. I'm just telling it like it is for the common man. But look at his actions. You call him Lion Ted. You smear him a million ways. And then now you're like, no, you can come on board. I can't. I don't get it. I don't fucking get it. And by the way, I just thought of this now, and it's true, like, but with Obama and Hillary, same thing. Like, the way they went after each other in the primaries, and then afterwards Obama's like, hey, Secretary of State? You want to be Secretary of State? Oh, good. It's so fake. Politics is so fake. We need actual, honest people in there. Now, finally getting to the substance here of what Ted Cruz would do as Attorney General. Well, we already kind of know, because he did insane shit as Solicitor General in Texas. So do you guys remember the story when he defended a state ban on dildos? Oh, good googly moogly. What have we gotten ourselves into? This guy might be the next Attorney General of the United States. and he thinks dildos should be banned. Ted Cruz, as Solicitor General, he bragged about, for example, defending Ten Commandments, statues, Ten Commandments monuments, or whatever the fuck they're called, on government land. Totally unconstitutional, violates the First Amendment. There's a clear, you're violating the separation of church and state, and you're putting one religion over other religions by putting the fucking Ten Commandments on government property. He defended that. He was proud to defend that. I mean, this is a guy who has all the authoritarianism of Donald Trump, but mixed in with theocracy. And this is another example of it here. Let's ban dildos because, pleasure for women. There's no right to pleasure for females. Come on now. And again, these are the people who also say at the same time, they speak out of both sides of their mouth because then he'll say, small government. I love small government. I want government so small that it would knock down your door if you're a woman going to work on yourself with a vibrator or a dildo and maybe put you in handcuffs, maybe fine you, something to that effect. We can't have it. We can't have women pleasuring themselves. Not in Ted Cruz's state, and now not in Donald Trump's and Ted Cruz's country. 2016, and we might have somebody for Attorney General who is a fundamentalist Christian, who's a theocrat, who doesn't believe in secularism, who would ban dildos for women. All that's going on, and we have really serious problems that need to be addressed. I mean, climate change, income inequality, money in politics. These guys are like, those issues don't even register. I'm busy trying to make sure your wife doesn't get off, trying to make sure she doesn't have an orgasm. Well, I'll tell you what, Ted, seeing your ugly face on TV every day might guarantee that no woman ever has an orgasm again. Okay. Was that too harsh? I don't care if it was. All right, now let's go to Donald Trump on trade. Donald Trump talked tough on trade and China during the election, but now the Chinese government is striking back. So in a government-run newspaper, they said this: if Trump wrecks trade, a number of U.S. industries will be impaired. Finally, the new president will be condemned for his recklessness, ignorance, and incompetence. A batch of Boeing orders will be replaced by Airbus. U.S. auto and iPhone sales in China will suffer a setback, and U.S. soybean and maize imports will be halted. Oh, boy. So, look, this is something that I mentioned a few times during the primary, and actually during the general, but I should have mentioned it more. Because here's the thing. Donald Trump, when he talks about trades, when he says we shouldn't do TPP, he's 100% right on that, because TPP is a deal we haven't set up yet, and it's a deal we haven't implemented yet, so it's avoidable. We could just not do it. So he's right on that, and he's right that it would outsource jobs, and he's right that we should do more manufacturing here and create more jobs here in the U.S., I agree with all that. Now, when it comes to, as he says, like renegotiate NAFTA and renegotiate these other things, I actually think he's right on that too. But, there's a big but. The question is, do you trust Donald Trump to be the guy to renegotiate those deals without sparking a trade war? And the answer to that, in my mind, is no, because I think he's kind of unhinged. I don't think he's that bright. I think he has the attention span of a gnat. And, like, all of his tough trade on talk, yeah, we'll slap a tariff on him and then that'll show him. Well, China responded with, oh, you're going to slap a tariff on us? That's nice. How about we slap a tariff on you? How about we don't export things to you that you need? How about we don't import things from you that you need to sell? So this is what a trade war is. It's, oh, okay, so, and they even say it in the article. The Chinese government says we're going to go tit for tat. So whatever you do, we'll do an equal and opposite thing that would hurt you. Oh, no. Now, look, again, team renegotiate those old trade deals. I'm team don't do TPP, so I'm fairly protectionist, and I'm on the record as being protectionist. But since I'm not a clown, I understand that this requires you actually have to sit down at the table with these different governments that you already have the deals with, and you actually have to iron out new details. I would trade out of necessity. as opposed to trading out of just trying to get more corporate profits for a bunch of rich assholes and having a race to the bottom. Donald Trump, with his anti-trade rhetoric, and Donald Trump, with how he says he would want to get us out of these deals, would unquestionably spark a trade war and would leave us worse off, not better off. So you'd have to work with the Chinese. You'd have to work with the Mexican government. You'd have to work with these different countries we have trade deals with and work out new terms. And the terms should, in my mind, benefit U.S. manufacturing more and should keep jobs here in the U.S. But you can't just fucking be a bomb thrower and say, yeah, no, I'm slap a tariff on you. That's what I'm going to do. And then everything's going to be good. And that's the end of the conversation. Well, no, because then you get this reaction from China. China's like, oh, you want to play that game? They're pulling a Scarface. You want to play rough? Okay. That's what they're doing. So while he's right on the overall framing and message of, come on, this free trade nonsense, this globalism nonsense is hurting us, he's right on that. But I don't trust him to handle the details of it to make it better. That's the downside. And the saddest part of it all is none of us should, you know, I wouldn't have trusted Hillary to not go further down that road. I think she would have gone further down the road of globalization and more outsourcing. Obama, though I think he's done many good things in office, I don't trust him on this either. He keeps pushing for TPP. He's still doing it today. So you have, like, the Democratic Party in unison. The establishment Democrats are for it. Some progressive Democrats are against TPP. But the establishment Democrats are for it. The establishment Republicans are for it. And then you have some Republicans against it, but they were only against it when they consider it Obama trade. It'll be interesting to see if Trump decides, and he very well might, with TPP specifically, decide, let's tweak some provisions and then pass it, and then say it's not the TPP, it's a new deal, and it's a great deal, and it's good for American workers, and try to pass that. If he does that, I have a suspicion the other Republicans who are against Obama trade are going to fall in line and be in favor of this. So, but look, at the end of the day, if Trump was being correct in his rhetoric on the campaign trail about what he wants to do, that would spark a trade war. I don't trust him to handle the details of that. Now, if that was just campaign rhetoric, and it might have just been campaign rhetoric and he was just trying to get elected, then I think China is actually going to be very happy with Donald Trump because he would probably even push us further in the direction of more outsourcing and less protectionism and more trade deals. So in my mind, when I analyze the situation, I see Trump doing one of the two things. Either the extreme of trying to get us out of the trade deals and doing it the wrong way and sparking a trade war, that would be a disaster, or going just being a standard politician and pushing us even further down the road of globalization and outsourcing, which would also be a disaster. The actual answer and how one should address these things, if I was president, there is no TPP. That's done. It's over. Totally done, totally over. We're not going to tweak some provisions and pass it under a different name. It's just gone. I'm scrapping it. So forget about it. That's gone. Any other bullshit trade deals you come up with that hurt the American people, scraps. Not interested. Don't even knock on my door. Don't even talk to me about it. And I would sit down with our allies to talk about NAFTA, talk about the World Trade Organization, and get better deals for the American people, but I wouldn't do it in a way that would spark a trade war. So that's the happy middle ground here. But it appears like we're with Trump, we might be in either extreme, and that could be ugly. Okay. All right, Rand Paul. Let's give him some credit. Senator Rand Paul is taking a stand against Trump's recent moves on foreign policy. He came out and said the following in an interview to Reason. I don't think anybody believed that he was going to be libertarian on foreign policy, but there was at least a glimmer of hope that he would be less of an interventionist than Hillary Clinton. The things he says unscripted on the campaign trail were much less hawkish than Hillary Clinton. And he goes on here and says, picking Rudy Giuliani and John Bolton to potentially be in charge of foreign policy, quote, is the most bellicose interventionist wing of any party. I can't support anybody to be our Secretary of State who didn't learn the lesson of the Iraq War. It concerns me that Trump would put someone in charge who is unhinged as far as believing in absolute and total intervention. Yeah, so Rand Paul is correct about this, and I would argue if Donald Trump ends up putting John Bolton anywhere in his administration. Anywhere. Every single thing he said that was non-interventionist during the campaign was just rhetoric. He doesn't believe any of it, and he's not going to act in that direction in any reasonable way. Because John Bolton, for those of you who don't know, he is the single worst neoconservative. So for all of Trump's anti-neocon rhetoric, anti-interventionist rhetoric, if he puts this guy in his administration, that's it. The non-interventionist talk was just to get elected. Because John Bolton makes Dick Cheney look like Noam Chomsky. This guy has never met a war he didn't love, still defends the disastrous wars we got into under the Bush administration, and openly says today, hey, we should attack Iran next. Let's do that. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. We have a lunatic who might be in charge of foreign policy. Trump is thinking John Bolton, Secretary of State, or Rudy Giuliani, Secretary of State. Rudy Giuliani, same thing. This guy's a fucking maniac. First of all, he doesn't know dick about foreign policy. Second of all, to the extent that we know anything about what he believes on foreign policy, it's crazy. I mean, the guy's a fucking lunatic. So if Trump goes with either one of these people, but I go further than what Rand is saying, if John Bolton is anywhere in his administration as a foreign policy advisor, as Secretary of State, or as anything, anything in his administration, that's it. All that non-interventionist talk was just talk. He doesn't mean it, and he will be massively interventionist. So Rand is right, and as I said, the day before the election, or the day of the election, before we got the results in, no, I think it was the day before the election, I tweeted this. I hope this is all a bad dream, and we wake up tomorrow to our general election of Bernie Sanders versus Rand Paul. Because that would be, I mean, I'd still be distraught if Bernie were to lose to Rand Paul, but if Rand Paul won, you go, oh, well, look, I might disagree with the guy massively economically, but at least I know on foreign policy and on social issues, on foreign policy he'll be great, probably, and on social policy he'll be pretty reasonable too. I mean, this is the like lone Republican who works with the Democrats on reforming the drug war and the drug laws and trying to, you know, have legalized marijuana and works in that direction. So if only we had a reasonable political system where those were the options. Bernie Sanders versus Rand Paul. Because, look, Rand Paul bucking his own party here and doing it in a principled way. You know, there are times where people take a stand and I go, that smells funky. I don't believe you. Rand Paul on this one, I believe him. Because he's consistently – look, he said it about the Bush administration. He's like, look, those guys with the wars they started were responsible for creating the vacuum that led to ISIS. So it's the hawks in both parties that are the problem here. He's right about that, and I'm glad somebody in the Republican Party is stating the obvious about John Bolton and Rudy Giuliani, that these are unhinged, massively interventionist crazy people who are imperialist to their core. And all of Trump's talk about, no, we're not going to spend the money on foreign policy and nation building. We're going to rebuild our own nation. It would be bullshit if these guys get places in the administration. Okay. All right, final story before we take our last break here. Donald Trump appointed a guy named Frank Gaffney to be a national security advisor in his transition team, and this guy is a complete and utter lunatic. So in an interview with the Daily Beast in 2012, Gaffney said, quote, "The Muslim Brotherhood was waiting to seize power in Washington, D.C., a moment which he called zero hour." Okay. This guy is part of Trump's team now, and he believes the United States is on the verge of implementing Sharia law. Not only should that disqualify you from being in a presidential administration, disqualify you from being a cashier at Arby's. I mean, you shouldn't be dog catcher. You shouldn't be on city council. You're a crazy person if you think that. I mean, you're either a liar, and you know that's not true, or you really are just a paranoid, unhinged maniac. Really? What is it, less than 1% of the population in the U.S. is Muslim? And of the Muslim population in the U.S., they are massively secular. I mean, we've covered the numbers. On the American Muslim population, more of them favor gay marriage than the evangelical Christian population. Creeping Sharia. It's coming. It's coming. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The Muslims just took over Nebraska. Dude, you're just wrong, and you're obsessed, and you're an anti-Muslim bigot. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you want to talk about genuine bigotry? This is what it looks like. Really? You think that the Muslim Brotherhood is waiting to seize power in Washington, D.C.? They continue here. They say, Gaffney had called for a new House committee modeled on Senator Joseph McCarthy's House Committee on Un-American Activities, dedicated to investigating, quote, the extent to which the Obama administration's anti-American activities reflect the success of the toxic Muslim Brotherhood in penetrating and subverting both U.S. government agencies and civil institutions. He really thinks the Muslim Brotherhood secretly controls the Obama administration and controls our government. I mean, what is it? Like, literally two Muslims in Washington, D.C. working in politics? There's Keith Ellison, who wasn't even in the Obama administration. He's a congressman, and he's a Muslim congressman, and he's part of the Progressive Caucus. He's massively progressive. And Huma Abedin was working in Washington. She was Hillary Clinton's top aide. But, like, that's it. Who else is there? And even if there are 37 more, let's say, really, they're on the verge of an insurgency? The Muslim Brotherhood has infiltrated Obama's administration. That's right. That's why he's currently bombing seven different Muslim countries, because he's secretly a Manchurian candidate for Islam. Part of Trump's team now. I find it amazing that fringe characters on the right always make it into the mainstream on the right, because there's no distinction anymore. There's no distinction. The zombies have taken over the mall. To steal a phrase from, I think it was Bill Maher who originally said that. I mean, that's what it is. You have people who were super-duper-duper fringe who have been so persistent in their demonization and their rhetoric over the years that enough people believed it that they put people in power who let them in the front door. Okay, come on, here. Yeah, you work in the administration. Tell me about how, you know, Boko Haram is invading Kentucky next Tuesday, because this is a serious conversation we need to have. There are no words. And look, man, on a serious note here, I mean, I've just been poking fun at this guy for a while, but you don't want people like this having Trump's ear, because Trump is very malleable and Trump will listen. You know, it's possible he can just be dragged around by people behind the scenes, establishment figures or not, or fringe figures. And they already were floating the idea of, like, a Muslim registry in the U.S. Oh, no. I mean, this is fascist stuff. That's what it is. That's authoritarian 101. Like, let's register Muslims. Let's say do extra surveillance of the entire Muslim community. Not, hey, let's just do our standard police work and investigate extremists and fundamentalists. Is there a plot going on? No, no, no. Let's do an extra crackdown on the Muslim community and take away their civil liberties and register them. I mean, what's the next step? You want to get them to wear a pin or something that identifies who they are? Where does it go from there? It's just, with a guy like this in government and, you know, having the president hear him out, that's a bad place to be in, man, because you know virtually everything he's saying is bullshit, and Trump might be naive enough to believe it, and if that's the case, how will Trump react the next time there's a terrorist attack? I mean, we already know if it's like a sovereign citizen's terrorist attack, they just, loner. Loner who you know, is misunderstood and has mental issues. That's what it is. It's not, you know, that doesn't represent all far-right wingers, that a far-right winger did a terrorist attack. Brush that one off. But if it's a Muslim, oh, now we got to crack down on all Muslims in the U.S. They're already talking about that. Imagine what happens the next time there's a terrorist attack. Oh, forget it. Forget it, man. This is bad. We're in a bad. So we got to oppose these people, and we got to oppose them strongly, because we can't. You don't lose track of the facts, man. I mean, Donald Trump, I've given him credit on his anti-TPP rhetoric. I've given him credit when he has said non-interventionist shit on foreign policy. Number one, I don't know if he believes any of it or if he'd act on any of it in a policy direction. Number two, there's still 85-95% of the other shit he says, which is just crazy. And now we know he's appointing people for his transition team who are more than willing, with a smile on their face, they go down the path of crazy And we got to stand up in solidarity with marginalized community because the marginalization is about to get a lot worse. All right, break time. When we come back, Bill O'Reilly takes a swipe at Megyn Kelly. Oh, boy, Fox fight. And one of the weirdest stories I've ever covered, the left might be relying on a sworn enemy to save us. I can't wait to talk about that with you. That's a story. Lindsey Graham is in that story. Wait until you hear how he might be our last hope. All right, stay right there, guys.
Take you to paradise.
Yeah.
Can't wait to be with you, girl. Can I have it more than twice?
Yeah.
When I look at you, I'm thinking what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
Woman, when I get you there, it's gonna be about me and you.
Yeah.
I tell you, I just need you so bad. Feeling like I'm about to erupt like a volcano.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make sure when I'm with you, baby.
I'm gonna love you here, love you there. Gonna make sure you remember this tonight.
Yeah.
All right, welcome back, y'all. This should be fun. Got Bill O'Reilly here. Bill O'Reilly did a tip of the day segment last night, which, side note, is hilarious. Like, who fucking sits around? I'm in a tough spot. I wonder what Bill O'Reilly would do. Nobody does that. Like, that's not true. Maybe there are, like, you know, some 87-year-old dudes in a nursing home who are like, I want to hit on the nurse, but I don't have the stuff no more. What would Bill O'Reilly do? But anyway, so he did this tip of the day segment, and it was on loyalty. So let's watch, and then I'm going to tell you guys what's going on behind the scenes at Fox News and what led him to say this.
The factor tip of the day, loyalty. This morning, James Patterson and I were on CBS this morning discussing Give Peace a Chance. When the conversation shifted into some problems the Fox News channel had earlier this year, I was not amused. I've got a country that's in a transition, political transition. All right, I've got a kid's book that I want millions of kids to look at. That's what I'm interested in, not making my network look bad.
But if your network is affected by it.
Excuse me, I got a little flat here. Are you okay?
Nora and I have known each other forever.
You guys don't want your network.
We're Irish people.
And I've got the Irish heat, Bill O'Reilly.
Stand on that. Right?
That's what I made it clear.
I mean, look, it's open season. Let's whack the Fox News channel. I've had enough of it. It's a good place to work, all right? So here's the deal. If somebody is paying you a wage, you owe that person or company allegiance. If you don't like what's happening in the workplace, go to human resources or leave. I've done that. And then take the action you need to take afterward if you feel aggrieved. There are labor laws in this country. But don't run down the concern that supports you by trying to undermine it. Factor tip of the day. Loyalty is good.
Oh, boy. So he's mad because Megyn Kelly wrote a book, and in the book is got all kinds of dirt about what's happening in Fox News, or what happened in Fox News. So there, of course, was the giant Roger Ailes sexual harassment, sexual assault scandal where 913 women came out, and they're like, yeah, no, bad guy, really bad guy. But did, you know, classic sexual harassment where he would basically say to these female hosts, like, oh, you want to get ahead? There's a way to do that. This dick bitch. Like, he didn't say it like that. But you know what I'm saying. That's what he did. I mean, he was using his position of authority to try to get sexual favors. And you can't do that. When there's a power dynamic like that and you're the boss and, I mean, that's sexual harassment. That's not okay. So, Megyn Kelly, when these reports first came out, Megyn Kelly was, mum's the word, didn't say anything about it, didn't address it, just sidestepped the issue completely. But all these different female Fox hosts were like, yep, he did that to me, yep, he did that to me, yep, he did that to me, and just, all of them just piped up at different times, yeah, guilty, guilty, guilty. So, eventually, when it was clear that he was going to be ousted from Fox News, Megyn Kelly, that's when she admitted, like, yeah, no, he tried it on me too, and released the book, and it says all this stuff in the book. By the way, it's not just dirt on Roger Ailes and Fox News behind the scenes. It's also dirt on Trump, for example. She reveals in the book that Donald Trump offered gifts for favorable coverage from various hosts. So all this different stuff. And O'Reilly's pissed about that. See, O'Reilly's a company dude, and he's an old school kind of dude. Look. You know, hey, I'm Big Papa Bear Bill O'Reilly. If I give you a job or my buddy Roger Ailes gives you a job and that happens to come with some strings attached, like my dick, well, I mean, you don't have to accept the offer, but don't come after me for doing that. Isn't that what anybody would do in our position? No, no, Bill. That's not what everybody would do in your position. It's no longer 1952. You can't go around like, you know, I have a position for you if you blow me. No, 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 no. So, like, he's still old school and flabbergasted at, like, and look at these uppity women daring to talk about times where there was attempted sexual harassment against them. How dare they? Where did they get this idea that they could, like, freely talk about what happened in their lives and attempted assaults against them? Bill, your time is gone. Now, I say that, but he's number one. He's the number one news channel, which is sad. But again, it's all people in senior citizens' homes and super duper old people. So that's on the way out. But it's so funny to see him from within that bubble. It's so crazy to watch it. Because they asked him in his interview on, what was it, the Today Show? I don't follow those early shitty shows. They had asked him, like, oh, like Megyn Kelly's book, you have anything to say about it? He's like, no! Fox News is tremendous. They're wonderful in every way, and you should be loyal to them, even if the fucking people there try to sexually harass you. You should be loyal to them and not say anything about it. What is that? I mean, that's such a mind-numbingly stupid old-school argument. Loyalty above everything else! Loyalty is the way to go! Okay, but what if the person fucks you over? Commits a crime against you. Loyalty! You gotta be loyal! It's almost so stupid that I feel like it shouldn't even need somebody to respond to it. Like, that's obviously silly. Not that this is an apt comparison, but take that principle, the principle of loyalty no matter what, and apply it elsewhere. Should people in the Red Army have been loyal to Stalin when he was telling them to purge everybody and shove them in camps? No! You go, well, no, some things should be ranked above loyalty, like common human decency. Well, look, man, I mean, in the case of Fox News and Megyn Kelly, yeah, it's common human decency should override a fucking creepy-ass boss who's trying to harass you. Totally. And Bill O'Reilly should have stood in solidarity with these women a long time ago, but, you know, there are questions. I'm just asking questions, and I'm just bringing up the questions that have been asked about what role did Bill O'Reilly play in this whole? Were him and Roger Ailes doing similar things? I mean, there's the famous story of O'Reilly, you know, trying to have phone sex, I think, with a producer at the time, and she's not interested in it. But he's like, he says, yeah, you know, what I want to do is I want to rub a falafel all over your body. Or what's that thing called? Yeah, falafel. She's like, what? And then I guess he realized, or people pointed out afterwards, he meant loofah. You know, like rub a loofah. He said falafel. Oh, Bill O'Reilly. He's as awkward as I am. Now, granted, when I'm talking about rubbing falafels over people, it's consensual. But that is so awkward. She didn't even want it. She's like, falafel? What are you? Click. So there was, I think, I don't know if he settled out of court for that or whatever it was, but there was a big scandal about that. Well, you know, the old guard is going away, and Bill O'Reilly's hanging on for dear life. No, I want to keep my power and defend sexual harassment. Time's going by, Bill. Tick-tock, tick-tock. You're up there in age. It's a new era. And you're on borrowed time, my friend. Okay. All right, I love this next story. I hope everybody listening is a political junkie enough to know about Lindsey Graham. I mean, he ran for president, but obviously senator. Let me explain how we're randomly on his side here. I have one of the most bizarre stories I've ever covered for you here. Liberals might be relying on one of our top sworn enemies for the good of the country. So listen to this. Huffington Post explains here. With Republicans in control of the House, the Senate, and come January, the White House, calls have come from some quarters of the Republican Party to eliminate the filibuster and ram through an unadulterated Trumpian agenda. Senator Lindsey Graham, on Tuesday, thoroughly rejected that approach. Quote, that's a horrible, terrible idea, he said, after an off-camera briefing with reporters in the Capitol. Asked if he'd vote against the effort if it came to the Senate floor, he said he would, quote, in a heartbeat. All right, so let me explain everything that's going on here. As of right now, because of the filibuster rules in the Senate, the way it worked when the Democrats held the Senate, the way it works now that the Republicans hold the Senate. You need 60 votes to pass anything. You need a supermajority to pass anything. You're going, hold on, Kyle, that doesn't make sense. Isn't it supposed to be 51 or 52 votes? I mean, if you have the majority, you know, aren't the rules that you get it? Well, no, because now in order to filibuster, you don't have to actually filibuster. You don't have to actually have somebody down there on the floor going, I'm going to talk for, you know, 12 hours and switch on and off with people and just talk until you concede. You could just declare we are filibustering. So if you declare we are filibustering, everything needs 60 votes to pass. Now, the Democrats didn't do what's called the nuclear option, where they got rid of the filibuster. Now, you can do that. And hilariously, you only need 50 plus 1, I think, in order to do that. So the Democrats could have gotten rid of it. They didn't get rid of it. So all their shit got blocked. Now, my fear is that the Republicans, they're not like the Democrats. They're not going to be like, oh, no, we'll be kind to the other side and keep that in place. I fear the Republicans will be like, yeah, no, day one, we're getting rid of the filibuster, so now all we need is a simple majority to pass anything, and then the Republicans run roughshod, doing whatever he wants, Paul Ryan doing whatever he wants, Mitch McConnell doing whatever he wants. They just go fucking nuts. The Republicans pass anything and everything they want because they have a majority everywhere. That's what I fear. But it turns out, no. You have some rogue Republicans, like Lindsey Graham, who doesn't really like Trump, who's like, yeah, no, I would vote against getting rid of the filibuster. And I would make it so basically the Democrats can continue to block anything the Republicans do. Now, I don't think the Democrats will, because the Democrats, when it comes down to it, always roll over to one extent or another on some issues to the Republicans. They did it under Reagan. They did it under Bush. They're going to do it under Trump, too. But to have that there is big. We need that there. If we don't have that there, we're useless. We're useless. The Republicans just do anything they want. And that would be such a disaster for the EPA, for the FDA, for a regulation of Wall Street, for taxes. It would just be, oh, my God, it would be so incredibly bad. So this is the only instance I can ever remember in my life where I'm on Team Lindsey Graham. Now, I think they need, what is it, three votes total among the Republican ranks to say, no, we don't want to get rid of the filibuster, and they're good. And we have one here with Lindsey Graham. So I think, I mean, we'd be depending on maybe John McCain. John McCain and Lindsey Graham love each other probably in multiple ways. So they might go hand in hand. John McCain might, you know, come back to the old Maverick, you know, banner that he was under and say, yeah, I'm voting to keep the filibuster. And then all you'd need is one more Republican. And if that's the case, can you find a Republican from a blue state who it would actually be politically advantageous for them to keep the filibuster? Because to have a check on Trump, yeah, you could do that. So we may luck out here because of fucking Senator Lindsey Graham, who I've never agreed with on almost anything, and I mock viciously. I mean, I've treated that guy bad, man. I mean, every time I've ever spoken about him, is it, bitch? I mean, this is a guy, he ran for president, and when he did his, like, concession at the end of it, nobody cared. I don't think anybody voted for him. I don't think he has kids, but his family members were like, I'm not voting for Lindsey. But he released it on his YouTube channel. His YouTube page had like 37 subscribers. I'm like, oh my God, you ran for president. You have 37 subscribers. That's the saddest thing I've ever seen. That's the saddest thing I've ever seen. And he's so hawkish. He wants war everywhere. So I still disagree with him on so many things. But politics makes for strange bedfellows, as the old saying goes. But I don't want Lindsey to think of me and him in bed together because he might get turned on. But on this one, I agree. Don't get rid of the filibuster. John McCain, hop on board. Don't get rid of the filibuster. One other Republican, hop on board. Don't get rid of the filibuster. And by the way, there's one other aspect that might make it so they don't get rid of the filibuster, which is in the midterms, they want to have an argument for when shit isn't better. So under Republicans, shit never gets better because they're Republicans. They're going to fuck everything up. So since that's the case, when the midterms roll around, people are going to go, my life is not any better. And the Republicans control everything. So now we're going to vote for the Democrats. Mitch McConnell wants to be able to have an argument against that. So Mitch McConnell could say, oh, look, man, the problem was that these fucking Democrats, they're obstructing everything. They filibustered everything. They obstructed everything. So you got to vote for the Republicans to get a supermajority so the filibuster doesn't matter. So that would create an argument where you know, the base might get more riled up. So that there's another political reason why they might want to keep it. But I'm not sure I buy that argument, because Republicans are Republicans and they always want to run roughshod. But the few rogue ones might save us here. So for the first time and maybe the last time in my life, I'm going to say it. You go, Lindsey Graham. Okay. Would you look at that? I got two stories left. We may finish a wee bit early today, lass. But let's talk a little bit about what happened in Japan, which should make all of you angry because it exposes just how incompetent and terrible our government is. Oh, and for everybody who's listening on the live show here, you're not going to get – I'll read for you what it says on the screen. I have a little clip here, maybe a minute and 30 seconds long, but it says stuff on the screen. So I guess, yeah, I'll read it for you because you got to know what it's saying. But as I'm reading it, just understand they're showing pictures and video of this gigantic sinkhole that opened up in Japan and basically just how quickly they were able to fix it. There was a gigantic sinkhole that opened up in the middle of a busy road in a Japanese city. And the story of how quick they fixed it will absolutely blow your mind. So let's go to a short video here from CNN. All right, so it opened up on November 8th. By November 15th, it was totally fixed. And they're showing the pictures here. It says on screen, a 50-foot deep sinkhole opened in the Japanese city. Went too fast, but in just 4 days, the hole was filled with a mixture of sand and cement. It took an extra 48 hours to reinstall electricity, water, and other utilities. The sinkhole started off as two craters and became a 90-foot by 100-foot void. It swallowed huge sections of the road, including traffic lights, and cut power to 170 households. Water from destroyed sewage pipes seeped in. A subway extension and the soil's composition were believed to have played a part. They fixed that thing instantly. What was it? November 8th it opened up. November 15th it was totally fixed. A fucking gigantic sinkhole. It looked like, honestly, but I don't know anything about engineering or any of that stuff, but it looked like I didn't even know if you can fix it. Because it's this giant fucking gaping hole in the middle of a city. But they were like, oh, no, that's no problem. Anyway, come on, construction guys in. They had all the infrastructure in place to rebuild the infrastructure, and they were able to do it so quickly that it blows your mind. In fact, earlier in the day, I saw TJ the Amazing Atheist had tweeted about this and, you know, said, I hope this story is fake because if it's not, it should make you feel bad, yada, yada, about how, you know, we are with our infrastructure and how long it takes to get shit fixed. But I read the article, or the headline of the article, and I saw the site that the article came from, and I thought to myself, come on, TJ, that's got to be a fake article. In fact, I was surprised that he thought for a split second it was real. I was like, dude, you're being naive, like you're being gullible. I didn't say this to him, I didn't tweet it to him, but I was thinking, come on, TJ, like you got to have a better meter than that, and you got to know when a story's fake. Turns out, no, he was 100% right. I was just dead wrong in assuming that's a fake article, because sometimes you see these fake articles like, oh, you know, Loch Ness Monster appears in wherever, and people and you know, it's on like a site with a name I've never heard of. I'm like, well, that's obviously fake. But this one was like, oh, you know, giant sinkhole gets fixed in short amount of time and looks like nothing ever happened. I thought that's got to be fake. It's not fake. So what this shows you is it's simply a matter of willpower. That's it. So here in the U.S., for example, we have in Flint, Michigan, people still don't have clean water. And it's not just Flint, Michigan. It's in a bunch of places all around the country. People don't have clean water. And, you know, we go, oh, my God, no, it's just so hard, and we can't get it right, and it requires all this work, and it's just, oh, my, we don't have the money for it, and blah, 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 blah. And, no, the response is, no, you can fix it. You're just not applying the correct amount of effort. You're just not dumping the correct amount of resources into it, and you're not hiring the right people. But it shows you, man, it's possible. You just have to have the will. And, of course, corruption stands in the way in the U.S. government massively, where they're not incentivized to actually fix our infrastructure. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D. according to the Society of Civil Engineers. A D. I mean, that's horrendous. Horrendous. We got to fix it. You know, I would love it if we actually did have the best infrastructure on the planet. I would love to be number one in infrastructure. But we're not. We're not even close. We're not even trying. And when you see a story like this, you just get depressed. Like, oh, China. Boom. China. That's really offensive. Anyway. Japan. Boom. They fix it 1, 2, 3. So, super sad. And I hope that we get to a point where we can do this with our roads, with our bridges, with our levees, with our airports, with everything. Because, to steal from Donald Trump here, we actually should make America great again. I don't think he's going to do it, but I think we should do it for our infrastructure and for other things. And it shows here that Japan is by far and away ahead of us on this issue. Okay. And last story. It's about anal sex, so aren't you lucky? I have my favorite story of the day here coming out of Canada. RT explains, Canada's Liberal government said it will repeal a section of the criminal code that effectively bans anal intercourse for 16 and 17-year-olds, which is now viewed as infringing on the rights of gay and other sexual minorities. The measure was announced on Tuesday morning by Justice Minister Jody Wilson-Raybould, who said that it was about time to scrap the discriminatory law. Okay, so a bunch of thoughts on this. First of all, it's hilarious that the justice minister is like, okay, what's on the agenda today for justice? Anal sex? All right, let's do it. That's awesome. That's awesome. We got a reality star here in the U.S. that's about to be president, and you guys are talking about anal sex in the context of justice. We're in good shape. This is fine. Nothing to see here. But furthermore, the other thought that I couldn't escape from my head is, how did that law come about in the first place? That somebody decided, I guess, in Canada, well, the age of consent is 16. That's what it should be. Okay, by the way, reasonable line. I think I agree with that. But then they go, but, you know, obviously for anal, it's got to be 18 or above. What? Well, 16 legal for sex, 18 or above for anal sex. Because, I mean, obviously, come on. No, what do you mean, come on? What's the argument? There's no argument there. Why are you making a distinction? If you're going to legalize sex, you legalize sex. It's not like, I mean, what, do you really want to make it that complicated? All right, blowjobs can start at 17, but sex is legal at 16. At what time should we allow cunnilingus and 69? Maybe we should push that off to 18? All in favor say aye. Like, what? No, just draw a line, and that's where the line is, and then it is what it is. But no, they made it, they like did levels. All right. You could do it in the pussy, but not in the ass. All right? But then they're explaining here, or at least they say, well, it's discriminatory against gays. I don't know if that was the original intent of the law, where they're like, well, you know, the gays who like the butt sex, let's crack down on them. I don't know if that was the intent, but either way, there shouldn't be a weird, like, graded system of consent. Like, well, this is okay, and that's okay. That's overregulation from the government, so I draw a line and just say everything's okay after that. So I agree with the change of the law, and I don't understand why the law existed in the first place. But I just don't know if it was because of discrimination against gay people. But it should have been that way for everybody across the board. Whatever, if you're going to legalize sex at a certain age, you legalize sex and you don't, you know, try to carve out exceptions for certain kinds of sex, because that's just weird. So anyway, Canada is becoming a more inclusive and just place today, ladies and gentlemen. They finally are looking into equality for butt sex. All in favor of equality for butt sex, say aye. All right. So here we have it. I'm done for today's show. I got to shoot on over to the new studio. You want to know the funniest thing? We're only waiting for chairs. We got this whole gigantic expensive studio and chairs are missing. We need chairs. So waiting on the chairs and waiting on the inspection, and then we're ready to go over there. But I'm still doing little electronic shit here and there because there's a lot of electronic bullshit that goes into a studio. So we'll see. I don't know when the inspector's coming, so I don't want to overpromise, but we'll be doing the show from the new studio soon. Maybe I'll do – no, I can't do it today, actually. I was going to say maybe I'll do a little recording of it and then just show you the recording of the studio, but I don't think I could do that today. So anyway, soon, be patient. It'll happen. It's happening. I'm just as excited as you are, if not more excited. But so I'm going to shoot over there now, and naturally – we'll be back tomorrow for another lovely edition of Secular Talk, and who knows, maybe I'll have some more some more seltzer companies sending me pre-seltzer, because I'm a sellout to Big Seltzer. All right, guys, love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Mwah. I'm out.